he was unlike anybody else, even though, yes, you know, the cliche about him is that he assumed several characters, you know, the alien, the thin white Duke. He was a Cockney boy from Brixton who really connected, or let me put it the other way, his fans connected with him because he had orange hair. He was different. He sang about tall Venusians. His music is terrific, although he claimed, I think on a recent Charlie Rose rerun, that he wasn't really a musician. Of course, he was a terrific musician. He was being humble. He's got that terrific sax solo at the end of Lou Reed's Walk on the Wild Side, which he produced, and it was really Lou's second solo record, but chose to release it first, and it really was a kind of coming out, if you will, a kind of bisexual coming out of Lou Reed.
So his style and look and his persona changed a lot. You mentioned his orange hair and, as an alien, Ziggy Stardust, also the thin white Duke.
Right.
Can you define a Bowie fan? Is that possible?
You know, no. And I think in an interview with on NPR, and he said, right, you know, that's what you Americans know about me. I do characters, and Let's Dance. That's about what you. So I would say I would say that he spoke. I would listen to Bowie with friends, and we would enjoy it, and we would connect. But there's a way in which David Bowie reached out to you alone. And I think some folks have written about the loneliness of his songs and of his fans. Now, I'm not saying his fans are a bunch of losers or lonely folks, but he really reached in. I think all Bowie fans, and there are different groups of them, felt touched by David Bowie in a way that very few other artists.
So there are fans of his entire body of work, and then there are fans of just segments of his career.
Probably.
Yeah. Your gateway song was Memory of a Free Festival. What effect did this song have on your life and your future taste in music?
Growing up in New York on Long Island and listening to WNEW-FM, and they never would ID their songs. They would play 20 songs in a row and you'd...
Classic album rock.
It would take you, yeah, before it was called that. And this is 1969. Late at night, I hear this, you know, this guy with a sort of little cheesy organ, the way that song begins, and he says, maybe I should announce this. And before you know it, I mean, he's singing about passing bliss amongst the crowd, and it's a free festival and so on, and Woodstock was looming, or maybe it had already happened, I'm not sure. But I was a 15-year-old listening to that late at night, and then for 4 minutes at the end of that song, he just sang over and over again, "The Sun Machine is coming down, and we're going to have a party." That song is probably my favorite because it's the first.
And what effect did this song have on your future taste in music?
Well, I saw how it could reach out, and that the just the audacity of that repeating that chorus over and over again. And that's what rock, one of the great things about rock is its repetition. And there's little nuances, right? Each time he sings it, which gets a little Philip Glass-esque in that it's repeated and minimalistic in that way. The instrumentation on that song is quite minimal.
Well, let's take a listen to that song, and let's pay particular attention to the end chorus, "The Sun Machine is Coming Down."
Yeah, but you don't have 4 minutes.
From the 1969 album Space Oddity, Memory of a Free Festival, David Bowie on Sound Ideas. We're talking about Bowie with Bill McBride, an Illinois State University Associate Professor of English who teaches film and drama, among other subjects. And this is Let's Dance from 1983, one of Bowie's greatest commercial successes. You're not a fan of this song. Why is that?
No. It's a terrific pop song. The thing is that I was, as a graduate student, I was a semester in London, and I was in charge of all the undergraduates in a residence hotel when that record came out. I was excited to be in London. I was going to see the Psychedelic Furs and the Slits, and that song was an anathema, because particularly the undergraduates played it 1,000 times every night. So it wasn't the Bowie I had grown up with, but I was being snobby.
Would there be a Richard Butler of the Psychedelic Furs without Bowie, though? Their singing styles were fairly similar.
That's a great observation.
Would there have been a new wave, do you think, without Bowie? Or what shape would it have taken?
I think it might have happened. He's very important.
Well, let me tell you about how Let's Dance affected me.
Please.
It was the height of MTV, and it reminded me of the slightly weird kids in high school who were huge Bowie fans. And we sort of touched on some of these lonely people that maybe were attracted to his music. And it sent me back looking for older Bowie. I figured there must be something more there, and I was vaguely aware of a larger discography, but had not gone back to check that out. So that might be something good coming from a pop hit for a somewhat alternative artist. Any other benefits to a pop hit for a musician sort of usually on the cutting edge of arty music?
None of us were there hardly at the beginning when he was still called Davy Jones.
Davy Jones.
Right. So we all have gone back. I didn't know about Love Me Till Tuesday and The Laughing Gnome and those songs from very early in his career. If you look at that video for Love You Till Tuesday, it's called A Song and a Mime by David Bowie, and it's a video, and it's terrific. And he does all of that terrific miming.
Any other benefits, though, to a pop hit for an alternative artist?
Sure. I mean, the fans buy it for the pop hit, and they discover everything else about it.
And as it concerns what was MTV, do you think there would be an MTV without Bowie? He was making videos before there was an MTV.
Sure. So I don't want to, overkill, but lots of, the Beatles were making videos and so on. But yes, he is instrumental, and he was MTV. I mean, just like your experience of seeing Let's Dance, he was onto that terrifically early. Of course, it was natural for him to get into films, and he did terrific work in films. You could look up Internet Movie Database and look at all the films he was in. The one that stands out for me that was not mentioned in the most recent New York Times piece on the 10 or 12 films he had been in was his performance as Pontius Pilate in Martin Scorsese's Last Temptation of Christ. It was just such a surprise. I think I knew he was going to be in the film. But when he shows up as Pontius Pilate, it's terrific. And there's kind of a inside joke in Hollywood that, evil people have British accents. And it was just perfect that Pontius Pilate, unlike Willem Dafoe, who, of course, did not have an English accent, he's Jesus. So he's American, and Pontius Pilate's a Brit.
Younger musicians cite Bowie as an influence, or critics point out a Bowie influence. Do you see that in Lady Gaga or Lorde or The Killers or other musicians you'd like to mention?
Oh, amen. No, I mean, sure, terrific. Your list is just as good as mine might be. That was...
Do any of these musicians actually measure up to their mentor, do you think? Are they reaching Bowie quality?
No, I mean, that's not, I don't know how fair of a question that is the comparison. David Bowie is terrifically unique, and his source never dried up. I mean, if he was done for 10 years, he would stop.
Let's talk a little bit about Bowie and you. How has he influenced your music listening or even your career?
As I was saying earlier about the way he reaches in and touches people, he really touched me. And in late 60s, early 70s, here was not a role model, but someone who was being successful and being him, or can I say herself? He clearly opened up a kind of bisexual and...
And androgyny in rock.
Right, and a queer a persona that, you know, was part of the late 60s. I mean, that explosion of politics and opening up all that race issues and so on, David Bowie was there. I would remark that folks who are talking about their favorite records and all these retrospectives, very few people talk about Black Tie, White Noise, which he produced as a direct result of the Rodney King beating and the L.A. riots. He was terrifically political as well. Heroes, you know, Anna Merkel said that song was so important to having the wall come down.
Is it your sense that David Bowie's death affected people much differently than other celebrity deaths? The online tributes, the Facebook postings, radio, TV tributes, the tweets have been overwhelming in my social media circles. Why is that, do you think? What is it about Bowie?
Yeah, I think you're right. And you know, particularly with social media as it's where it is today in Facebook and how you could upload videos and kind of be your own DJ or your own video producer, folks are making their little David Bowie records and compilations and remembrances. And it's very personal in a way, perhaps, that losing someone else wouldn't be. I mean, when... You know, when we lost Lennon, he was taken away from us. Cancer took David.
But it was also almost as sudden as John Lennon, because no one right. really knew he was sick.
And that's maybe part of his humility, that he did not. Those folks he worked on the latest record with, very few of them knew he was ill.
And we'll get to that in just a moment.
Okay.
The grief and shock seem to be multi-generational as well. What
yes.
do you think accounts for that?
Well, because of his long career, he spanned several generations. And no matter where, you know, you are in the timeline, you know about David Bowie. I mean, my daughter, she's a One Direction fan, and there's a song, I don't remember the title, but it pretty much quotes Changes. It's Changes in the Year or something, I think it's called.
I mentioned those weird kids in high school. I'm reminded of one who actually cut his hair reminiscent of Bowie, or as close as his dad would actually let him cut his hair that way. What have they lost with the passing of Bowie? Somebody they could identify with?
Well, you know, maybe it's a different approach to death.
I say weird. Maybe they're more outsiders.
No, that's fine.
Not the jocks, not the popular kids.
I see where you're going with that, but what I want to say is I don't think we've lost them. Mm. He left such a record, records, films. And he's got, you know, two pieces. He's got a piece on Broadway right now. He is, that's what's so terrific about this this medium, is that you leave things behind. And that, what he has left behind is momentous. And I don't think we feel abandoned. I think that Bowie fans are okay.
I was struck by the video for Lazarus. It's a song from his 26th and last studio album, Black Star. This is a project started after his cancer diagnosis.
Yes.
Let's take a listen to Lazarus.
Look up here, I'm in heaven. I've got scars that can't be seen. I've got drama, can't be stolen. Everybody knows me now.
What do you think of this song and the timing of this last release and the rest of the album Black Star? None of this is an accident. Not in terms of the relationship of the release to his death.
So looking at the video, which is easily available, you look at the Lazarus video, and the prime cinematic trope in that video is Hitchcock's God shot. The directly overhead, anybody in cinema knows that means that the figure being shot, that being framed that way, is dying, is dead, is in trouble. And that song and that performance, he comes out of an armoire, and soon he's in bed and he's not looking pretty. Well,
there's a blindfold with what appear to be coins over his eyes, even.
Absolutely, which is the British, you know, penny on your eyelids. The reviews are odd for this record in that, to a woman and man, they say it's jazz oriented, and I just don't hear that. I mean, yes, there are jazz musicians on the record, and there are horns, and some of the instrumentation is jazz, you know, like, but this is pure Bowie pop, as far as I'm concerned, and I mean that, you know, as an honorific term, not as putting it down. It's deep, but it's not jazz.
Bill, thanks for your time and for being on Sound Ideas today.
Thanks, Mike.
Bill McBride is an associate professor in Illinois State University's English department and a culture critic for Sound Ideas. Reports are David Bowie will be laid to rest in Manhattan. He and his family spent the majority of their time in the United States, and he died at his home in New York City. I'm Mike McCurdy.